Good morning. May it please the Court. Erica Bailey-Drake here today on behalf of Carol Ann Luther, Plaintiff Appellant. I'm going to do my best to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. Ms. Luther seeks to have the unfavorable Social Security decision reversed and remanded pursuant to Sentence 4. Specifically, she'd either like it reversed with instructions to calculate benefits or a remand for further hearing. In support of this position, we contend that the administrative law judge erred in 3 specific ways. The first error pertains to Ms. Luther's VA disability rating. Ms. Luther was afforded a 100% VA disability rating effective in December 2012. The basis of that rating was 100% attributed to post-traumatic stress disorder, and that was due to military sexual trauma. She was granted an additional 30% for a genitourinary impairment, and she was granted an additional 10% due to a service-connected back injury. Within the
administrative... What extent do you think that the Appeals Council discussion of the disability rating cures any concern that you've raised with regard to the adequacy of the ALJ's consideration of the VA rating?
It's our contention that the Appeals Council's refutation of the rating actually has no merit here, and really no place here, because unfortunately, because the Appeals Council denial states it denied the request for review, it did not accept jurisdiction, which effectively makes that decision unreviewable, and that's pursuant to 20 CFR 404.981. In addition, what the Appeals Council said was also insufficient to really evaluate the VA rating, because as I indicated, the VA rating has 3 major components, not only the PTSD due to military sexual trauma, but also the genitourinary impairment. And that's an impairment that the ALJ entirely missed. She was aware of it, because at the time of the hearing, prior administrative counsel told the ALJ that, in fact, there was this VA rating. It was 100% PTSD, 30% genitourinary, and 10% back impairment. But on the record, the ALJ said VA 100% VA disability rating has no bearing. It's something we consider. So it's apparent from the record that, unfortunately, the ALJ didn't really understand the legal standard for evaluating VA disability ratings in the Social Security context.
Didn't he also, or he or she, I don't know which, say... verbally, though not in his opinion, something to the effect of it really doesn't matter what the VA said.
That's exactly what she said. That was exactly the sentiment that was on the record. Again, I wasn't there, so I don't really know. I can only glean the context from the transcript. But the takeaway is she did not understand what the purpose of the VA disability rating is in the Social Security context. And in fact, that the legal standard is ordinarily an ALJ must grant that VA rating great weight unless persuasive, specific, valid reasons that are supported by the record are given.
So you want this to go back to the ALJ to reevaluate Dr. Flynn's evaluation?
Effectively, because Dr. Flynn's medical source statement was incorporated into a hypothetical to the vocational expert, it's not necessary.
Do we have the full records from the VA? Is this everything we've got?
Yes.
Is Dr. Flynn's evaluation? Is that the basis for the 100% disability finding? Is Dr. Flynn's check the box?
No. The basis of the VA disability rating is in the file. It's at Exhibit 12D of the Administrative Law Judge's decision. And within that document, it specifies exactly what the VA considered in arriving at the VA rating decision.
Wasn't there some additional paperwork that came before the Appeals Council that was not before the ALJ?
Yes.
Missing like 3 pages, right?
Precisely. 3 pages were missing. However, the part of the rating that specified exactly what the VA considered in arriving at its conclusions was there. Basically the evidentiary list, their exhibit list.
So my question is if we send this back to the ALJ, we don't really have anything else to put before the ALJ. I mean, we can tell them that they're wrong.
Correct.
But we don't have any additional information that's going to expound on what Dr. Flynn saw.
No, you don't. Because in addition, there is the report from Ms. Shapiro. Ms. Shapiro was the licensed social worker who was treating Ms. Luther.
But Dr. Flynn, was he at the VA?
Yes. And he not only works at one VA, he's actually the treating psychiatrist for veterans suffering from PTSD all over the state. You can kind of glean that from his letterhead. But
in other words, the VA people, I don't know this, but possibly, the VA people who made the decision had some particular reason to be relying on him when she was a person they presumably dealt with.
Absolutely.
Regularly, right?
Absolutely. And
so in terms of evaluating his opinion, they were in a better position to do it than this ALJ, who probably never heard of him before.
Certainly. And certainly the VA is going to be in a much better position to evaluate military sexual trauma and the impact that that's going to have on functional limitations in the workplace than an ALJ who did not even reference the fact that the PTSD was due to military sexual trauma. In evaluating Dr. Flynn's opinions, unfortunately, the administrative law judge did not note the fact that he was highly specialized, did not acknowledge how many times Dr. Flynn had actually treated Ms. Luther.
How many times had he treated her?
That is somewhat up for debate.
How could the ALJ deal with this if it's still somewhat up for debate?
It's somewhat up for debate because on the medical source statement, you may see on the first page, it says treated her for 18 months, and it's hard to tell if it says 2 visits or 20 visits. Mm-hmm. Presumably, it's 20 because even if he didn't treat her 20 times, he probably reviewed the records from Ms. Shapiro because the two of them were acting in conjunction to treat Ms. Luther.
But there's no 20 pages of records.
Right. But even if he had only treated her 2 times, because of his specialization, because of the fact that he is more highly skilled in dealing with veterans and also their psychiatric needs, he should have been given deference. He should have been given weight as a treating physician.
What do we do with Dr. Goodman's report? Dr. Goodman's report appears to be the most comprehensive evaluation of her. And at page 370 of the record, that's page 21 of Dr. Goodman's report, he acknowledges the psychiatrist, the Veterans Administration, has diagnosed her with a post-traumatic stress disorder due to this assault. I believe this has allowed Ms. Luther to receive psychotherapy through the Veterans Administration. Then 2 paragraphs later, he says, Ms. Luther is currently temporarily partially disabled psychiatrically. She is barely in this category. Now, I'm not sure what barely in this category means. Is she just barely temporarily disabled, or is she on the verge of being permanently disabled? That is, that she's about to move out of partially disabled into permanently disabled.
Right. And I think part of the problem with Dr. Goodman's evaluation is he was evaluating her for a workers' comp claim. She had, after she had left the service, she had worked for a law firm. And while she was working at that law firm, she was subjected to pretty horrific abuse. And so that was the basis of the workers' compensation claim. So Dr. Goodman may have been struggling with how much of the disability do I attribute to her childhood abuse, her veteran abuse, and also to this workers' compensation abuse.
Right, but all he has to do is just get to the point of saying PTSD, whatever the source is, whether it's attributable to the VA service or not. That might have been the restriction on Dr. Flynn, but it's certainly not a restriction on Dr. Goodman.
No.
And he says she's in need of psychological and psychiatric treatment to reach maximum medical improvement. So the most discerning review we have in the record is Dr. Goodman, and he doesn't seem to be willing to give full deference to the VA's findings on this. He seems somewhat skeptical of this.
He may not have had the benefit of Dr. Flynn's later medical source statement as well as Ms. Shapiro's later statement that she had as well, which showed that many years later, at least a year and a half later, she was still really grappling with the effects.
I don't know what good it would have done him to have had the report we have from Dr. Flynn, because it's really just very conclusory. The check the boxes is really not a very helpful thing.
Although Dr. Flynn does make some comments on the medical source statement, and also the records underlying his initial visit with Ms. Luther were within the administrative record.
A year and a half earlier.
Yes. And at that time, he noted that during the interview with her, she was dissociating when she was discussed the traumatic events that she had witnessed. So, you know, one thing that we can say about each of the psychiatric or psychological medical opinions that are within this file, they all intersect someplace. They all intersect to say that she had a poor prognosis. Dr. G. Giaro, whom the administrative law judge credited, who is the consultative examining physician in this case, she said that the likelihood that Ms. Luther would recover from PTSD was poor. Additionally, she noted that she would have difficulty with stress in the workplace. She would have difficulty attending a regular work week or a regular work day. That's significant. It's also significant because although the administrative law judge credited that opinion, she did not incorporate those particular limitations into her residual functional capacity.
One thing she says is that Carol Luther was going to counseling originally twice a week and now once a week.
Ms. Shapiro.
We don't know who is that.
That was with Ms. Shapiro.
Okay.
Yes, and her testimony.
She was discounted because she wasn't a medical person and because
correct.
She was relying on subjective complaints. But of course, for psychiatrists, therapists, you always rely on subjective complaints.
Well, and those were the two rationale provided by the ALJ. As an other source, yes, the ALJ is required to give germane reasons. And it's our contention that that was not a germane reason because, in effect, Ms. Shapiro's report that she provided was pretty exhaustive, and she stated that what she was basing it upon was what she observed during the time she examined Ms. Shapiro. And she's perfectly within her right to make statements about the severity of Ms. Luther's impairments along with her functional limitations. I see my time has expired.
Thank you very much.
I apologize.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Tina Neiker. I'm appearing on behalf of the Acting Commissioner of Social Security, Nancy A. Berryhill. I wanted to address claimant or appellant's argument.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry?
Can you just speak into the mic?
I wanted to address claimant's or appellant's arguments regarding the VA rating. We believe that the ALJ properly considered the VA rating in its decision. The ALJ referenced it on page 26, noting that
he noted its existence, but he didn't do anything. He didn't explain why he was disagreeing with it.
Well, if you look at the substance of the decision, and the standard of review here is whether the ALJ's decision is based upon substantial evidence, and the ALJ's decision is replete with references to the VA records.
We know the ALJ gave great weight or started from that presumption and then decided not to. Do we just have to infer that?
I think you can infer that from the ALJ's decision because of the specific references to the record regarding the VA report.
What about the fact that he said at the outset that he didn't think it was of any importance?
He says that it has no bearing, and that refers to the agency's regulations regarding that another federal agency regarding the VA is not binding upon the SSA.
Having no relevance, what phrase did you use?
I believe the ALJ said that it has no bearing.
But it does have a bearing. He's wrong about that.
The VA rating in and of itself is not binding to the SSA.
Not binding, but that's different. There's a difference between has no bearing and is not binding.
Yes, Your Honor.
The fact that he then didn't say anything about it in his report other than it existed, the sensible inference is that he was carrying out his notion that it had no bearing. Rather than implicitly and without telling us, discounting it for some specific reason that he didn't tell us what it was.
Again, Your Honor, I think that the ALJ was referring to the statute regarding that it has no. It's not binding upon the agency. And if you look at the hearing transcript, the ALJ did leave the record open for 45 days in order for the claimant to submit additional evidence, which they did, that the ALJ then considered, which is Exhibit, I believe, 20F. I can get you the exact page numbers. But ultimately, the ALJ did consider the VA records. There's nothing in...
Did he do anything in his report other than note its existence?
In the decision itself? In the decision itself, he did note it, and in the hearing, he did discuss it. And he left the record open.
About it, other than it doesn't have any bearing.
On page 62 of the hearing transcript, he discussed that he was aware of it.
Yeah.
on page 62 and 63, he recognized that the claimant amended the onset date to coincide with the VA rating. So it's not as if the ALJ wasn't aware of its existence. It's not if the ALJ simply ignored it. Rather, that the ALJ did what it was supposed to do, which is review the medical records. And here, I don't think claimant can reasonably argue that there was any prejudicial error, because the records that the ALJ reviewed included not only the records before the VA, but it also included an additional time period that was after, and including to the state agent, and it includes state agency opinions, consultative opinions, and the QME, which was also not before the VA. So I think the ALJ's decision is supported based upon substantial evidence, because it included not only what
did
was...
Did the ALJ resolve any questions as to how many times Dr. Flynn had seen the claimant?
I believe the ALJ's decision references his very...
the brief 2013 letter, but then there's the 2014, which says he treated over a course of 18 months, and then we have this question as to whether we have two visits or 20 visits.
Yes.
And it might make a difference.
Yes, and I think the ALJ noted in its decision that Dr. Flynn's medical source statement was a bit conclusory. And
it is conclusory. But if he had seen her 20 times over the course of 18 months... That might affect an ALJ's decision as to about what Dr. Flynn thinks, right?
Again, I don't think that's in the record, Your Honor.
Ms. Shapiro, was she also at the VA?
I believe so. She was with the
right.
VA.
And Dr. Flynn was apparently a chief honcho on PTSD. Is that in the record?
I'm sorry?
In the record, what his role was at the VA.
Yes.
All right.
Dr. Flynn was with the VA.
All right. So... whether or not he saw her 20 times, we know that she was seen by the VA therapists weekly or biweekly.
It looked like she was seen biweekly for a moment, and then
right. Oh, so Dr. Flynn, I mean, this may be surmise, but it appears to me likely that he knew, or I don't know if he had any role supervising, but he knew that she'd been seen at the VA regularly for quite a while.
Correct, but there isn't any treatment records that would actually support Dr. Flynn's statements. And the treatment records that we do have...
But what I'm asking is, does it have to be his treatment records, or could it be the VA's treatment records in general, including Mr. Piro?
Again, if you look at the VA treatment records, there's nothing in those treatment records that I would assume that would support Dr. Flynn's conclusory statements.
Not Ms. Shapiro's letter? That doesn't support
No, Ms. Shapiro's statements were highly adopted.
Of course they were subjective, because any psychiatric evaluation, if she's met with this person for every 2 weeks for, I don't know, for how long, a year or two? I don't know how long.
It appears since 2010 is what...
All right, so a really long time. And if you're going to discount a therapist's opinions for being based on the subjective self-reporting, then none of them are worth anything, ever.
I think you have to look at... under the agency's regulations, you not only have to look at the subjective reporting, but you have to also look at the medical records and the treatment records to corroborate those types of symptoms. So if Ms. Luther had... symptoms of, you know, flashbacks and, was unavailable to interact socially, Dr. Giero found that she had only mild limitations in those areas.
How long did he talk to her for an hour?
Yes, Your Honor.
So as between somebody who's seen her every 2 weeks for several years and somebody who's seen her for an hour, why would you... believes the person has seen her for an hour?
Because there's just nothing in the record to corroborate the Ms. Shapiro's assessment, other than claimant's own subjective reporting.
The Social Security Administration has now given her disability. Is that correct?
It's my understanding.
2014.
I'm not aware. 2017. I believe it was because a change in age category. Ultimately, we believe that the VA rating, it was...
Excuse me, let me go on about Ms. Shapiro. You say there's nothing corroborating it. She says that Ms. Luther describes the following symptoms we experienced. She experiences frequent flashbacks. These include anxiety, heart pounding, shaking, etc. These symptoms have been exhibited during her individual counseling sessions. So she says, I saw it.
That's what she says in this letter, Your Honor, but I don't see anything in the actual VA records that support that. Claimant has not even identified those records, so it's unclear where she's getting these statements from.
But, again, this is somebody who's seen her every 2 weeks for years, and they did believe a person who saw her for 1 hour.
There is just no support for
that.
What
support did that person have?
If you look at the treatment records that was submitted for the VA, I don't see any support by Ms. Shapiro regarding these observations that she had. She said that she saw. And that's what the ALJ is relying upon. These conclusory statements are not supported by the record. And in addition, that she is an other source and not, you know, it's unclear where she saw Ms. Luther with these types of symptoms, or when, Your Honor. It's very unclear as to the timing as well.
And therefore, you just believe her. But you believe somebody who's seen her for an hour.
We believe that the ALJ looked at the record as a whole, considered all of the statements from the several doctors, and if you look at the different psychiatric evaluations, if you look at Dr. Flynn's statement on page 451, Dr. Flynn discusses that plaintiff could still remember and understand short and was only limited in her ability to understand short and simple instructions, which is consistent with the RFC finding. So even if you look at Dr. Flynn's statement, which is very conclusory and not supported by the record, at most you could still find that the ALJ's decision was supported by substantial evidence with respect to the PTSD and the RFC for simple and routine work.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to rebut and say that no reason is not a persuasive, specific, valid reason supported by the record, and the ALJ did not give any reason here. Additionally, under the Garrison criteria, we believe that any of the three sources of error, if the insufficiently credited evidence were credited, Ms. Luther would be entitled to a finding of disability. There can be no serious doubts that she's disabled. Two separate federal agencies have now found her disabled, both the VA as well as Social Security Administration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I thank both of you for your argument. The case of Luther versus Berryhill is submitted.